Psalm 68 begins, "May God arise, may his enemies be scattered, may his foes flee before him. May you blow them away like smoke, as wax melts before the fire. May the wicked perish before God, but may the righteous be glad and rejoice before God. May they be happy and joyful. Sing to God, sing in praise of his name, extol him who rides on the clouds, rejoice before him. His name is the Lord, a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing, but the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land." What is God doing in the world today? What is God doing in the world today? We've sung about it in that song just now, "We Are the Church," which actually as a song takes us on a bit of an overview of the book of Ephesians. We started looking at Ephesians before Christmas, and we started in chapter 1 where we read this in verses 9 and 10. "God made known to us the mystery of his will," that is, what he was planning on doing, "according to his good pleasure, what he wanted to do, which he purposed in Christ, to be put into effect when the times reach their fulfillment, to bring unity to all things in heaven and on earth under Christ." Bringing all things together under Jesus Christ. That is what God is doing in the world today. And how is he doing it? Well, again, we saw before Christmas and we sang in that song just now, once we were dead in sin, but now we're raised with him. That is, God has united us, a sinful people, as we just heard from Philip, those who are born in sin and are dead in sin, yet Christ has raised us to life. And we are united with him. That is how we are saved. But it's not just about me and Jesus. No, it's about us with each other. The second half of chapter 2 talks about how Jew and Gentile, these two groups that were famously enemies of one another, are brought together in the church. So, chapter 2, verse 14, "Christ himself is our peace, who has made the two groups one. He's destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility." God has made us one people, bringing together those who were divided. And why is he doing it? Chapter 3, verse 10, his intent is that now through the church, his wisdom would be made known to all, that we would see how good and wise and glorious God is by what he is doing in building his church. A united people, different people brought together in one under Jesus. And that is what God is doing in the world today. He is building his church. And it's not just about a small group of people who meet in a hall like this on a Sunday. No, in building his church, this is about his plans for the whole universe. Everything will one day be under Christ, and he is involving us in doing that. And so, we saw last week, what is our response to what God is doing in the world? Chapter 4, verse 1, we are to live lives worthy of this calling. We are to be completely humble, to be gentle, to be patient, to bear with one another, making every effort to keep that unity that God has won for us. And some of us are sat here thinking, how? How on earth are we to do that? We look around at each other, and some people are easier to love than others. Some people, the fact is that we find each other difficult at times. We're called to be patient, but that person's so frustrating. We're called to be humble, but that person is always wrong, and I just want to point it out to them all. It's hard. It's hard to be united when we are different. Living a life worthy of our calling, being completely humble, not just with each other, but out in the world. How can we possibly live up to it? But for some of us, we're not asking how. Actually, we're asking why. Why would I want to be united to God's people? Why would I want to be part of a church? Maybe you're here and actually you've just got out of a controlling relationship. And the idea of being committed again, the possibility of being hurt, actually you want to keep your distance a bit. Unity sounds scary. In fact, unity sounds a bit like somebody wanting to go and live under, you know, a dictatorship where everyone dresses the same and does exactly the same thing, and you have these pictures in your minds of loads of people in uniform marching in step. And our culture values being an individual, expressing yourself, being yourself. Don't let anybody else define who you are. And we think that joining the church, being united with the church, will squash us. We need to fit in. You know, wear different clothes, sound like those posh guys up the front. Or actually, we just don't want to be tied down by other people. We want to be able to live our own life the way that we want it to. And maybe it's okay to come along on a Sunday morning, but try and tell me what I do with the rest of my time and I'm going to run a mile. I don't want to commit to these people because they might demand something of me. They might stop me from being me. Doesn't unity just mean uniformity, everyone being the same? No, we want to be free. We want to be ourselves. And so some of us are thinking, why? Why be united? Why be part of a church? But here's the thing. Unity doesn't mean uniformity. It doesn't mean that everyone is the same. In fact, it's the exact opposite. Unity needs diversity in order to work. Look at verse 4. There is one body of the church. What makes up the body? We're not just all right hands or elbows. Different parts each do their own thing, but together. Sometimes people talk about somebody having two left feet. And what they mean by that is that they're a bit clumsy. They're not quite coordinated. No, we need a left foot and a right foot in order to walk. Or imagine for a second that everything kind of below my neck was just one big left foot. I'm not going to get anywhere. I'm not going to be able to accomplish anything. The whole body needs all of the different parts working together as one in order to be what it is meant to be. It's the same with the church. For us to be united, for us to do what God calls us to do, for us to work together as part of God's plan for the universe to bring all things under Christ, we need each other. We need diversity. And your unique contribution is what this body needs. So have a look. Verse 7. But to each of us, grace has been given just as Christ apportioned it. A church pastor and leader, John Stott, puts it this way. He says, this grace is not saving grace, it is serving grace. So this is when it says, each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. It's not talking about what we saw in chapter 2, by grace you have been saved through faith. Grace is an undeserved gift from God, and if you are a Christian, you have received the same grace as everybody else. Your salvation, unity with Christ, relationship with God the Father. But this grace is another undeserved gift of God in order to serve. Gracious gifts that allow us to serve one another. We'll see that even more next week in the rest of Ephesians chapter 4, or the next part of Ephesians chapter 4. But this is not saving grace, but serving grace, being able to serve one another. And if you look at verse 7, each one of us has been given this grace. No one is left out. I don't know what Christmas morning looked like for your family. Growing up, it was usually the case that the person who was sat nearest to the Christmas tree got the job of handing out all of the different presents to everybody in the room. So, you know, you pick up one and it kind of looks like a large Toblerone. And it's like, right, okay, that's Granddad's. And this one, oh, it kind of smells a bit of lavender. So, you know, that one's Grandma's. And, oh, wait, they've even got labels on. That's okay, that's going to make it easier. This one says for the nephew. So, yep, shake it. It sounds like Lego. We know that's right. We're handing out the different gifts. And if you're anything like me, you make some mistakes. You leave something at the back of the tree. Somebody gets left out by accident and you have to go searching. I don't know what handing out gifts looks like for you. Well, imagine Jesus sat by the Christmas tree and he is giving out gifts to all of his people. And no one gets left out. Everyone gets a gift, and it is just the one that Jesus has determined for that person in order to accomplish what Jesus has called them to do. In other words, every one of us has exactly what we need in order to serve the church, because Jesus gave us that gift. He's giving us what we need in order to do verses 1 to 6. To live lives worthy of the calling we have received. He is equipping us, enabling us to serve one another, to keep the unity of the Spirit. Now you might say, well, he's not given me anything. I got missed out. What can I do? But look at verse 7. To each one of us. Each of us is given something that is just what he needs. And how do we know that? Well, it's because of who is doing the giving. Verse 8. This is why it says in Psalm 68, when he ascended on high, he took many captives and gave gifts to his people. So Psalm 68, which we've read from already, is a psalm that talks about God's victory over his enemies. And it describes his ascent to his throne from which he rules and from which he gives gifts. We read it already, power and strength to his people. So Jesus isn't just sitting under the Christmas tree handing out presents. No, he is sat on the throne of the universe, having won the victory over every evil power against sin and death and the devil, and he takes them captive, verse 8 here. And it is from that throne, that victorious throne where he is crowned king of the universe, that he then gives the gifts that his people need to build and strengthen his kingdom. And just in case we're wondering, okay, but who exactly is this psalm referring to? Paul takes us on and explains it. He says, what does he ascended mean except that he also descended to the lower earthly regions? He who descended is the very one who ascended higher than all the heavens in order to fill the whole universe. In other words, the psalm says he's ascended on high. Well, how could he have ascended on high unless first he descended to earth? In other words, this isn't just talking about God in general. This is Jesus who descended at that first Christmas, became a baby, who lived the life that we never could, who died the death that we deserve, who then is raised to life and then ascends above the highest heaven, as it says in verse 10. In doing that, he wins the victory over sin and Satan. And so that same Jesus is not dead and buried, but is alive and reigning. And this, this is the Jesus who gives the gifts to his people, the victorious reigning king, whose plans are unstoppable, whose power is unbeatable, and whose love for his people is unquenchable. This Jesus is the one giving gifts to his people. He knows what we need. And so he gives gifts to each of us so that together, as we serve one another, his church might grow and his kingdom come. As gradually he, verse 10, fills the whole universe with his glory, bringing all things under his lordship. So this is the how from earlier. How are we to do this? Well, we don't do it on our own. We do it with Christ and with each other, with the gifts that he has given us. What's that mean? Well, it means that I need you in order to live the Christian life. And we need each other. There's no kind of Lone Ranger Christianity out on our own. We need the church. We need each other in order to do this. So, big picture. What is God doing in the world today? He is building his church. His church throughout time and space. And how is he doing that? He's doing it through local bodies of believers like this. A church like this is an outpost of that global church throughout time and space. And each of us in this local body has a part to play. God, as the song we sang just put it, God had a master plan to bring all things together under one head. And God being God, his plan is so intricate, so perfect, that his plan for all of history involves you and the gifts that he has given to you to serve him and his people today. You might be saying, yeah, right. I can't do what you're talking about. I can't do what they do. I see these people, so I can't do what they do. Think back for a moment, if it's not too traumatic, to the early days of the COVID pandemic. And if you were anything like me, and hopefully you weren't, because this perhaps puts me in a bad light, I started realizing just how important all of these kind of little jobs that I didn't really think about were to our whole nation functioning. Delivery drivers. Do you ever go into a supermarket and see empty shelves? Cleaners. Public transport workers. In a hospital, the doctors are dealing with the patients and the nurses are looking after the patients, but they can't do their jobs unless there is a supply chain in place that gets the personal protective equipment to them. They can't do their jobs if the cleaners aren't working. They can't do their jobs if they can't get to work because the streets haven't been clean, because the bus driver isn't there. In other words, every little part of this big system that we call our country, our economy, our whatever it is needed in order for everyone to do their jobs. We all work together, and it is exactly the same with the church. Whatever your role is, however you are able to serve, whether or not it is the same as the person next to you, you are needed. Jesus knows what he's doing. To each of us, grace has been given. And he hasn't given you the same gift as that person over there who you think, oh, I could never do that. Because they're doing it and you need to do something else. He knows what he is doing. We all need each other. And we're not even talking here about the fact that as a church we've got multiple rotas on any given Sunday, with titles of what it is that you're doing. You're a crash leader, or you're a Sunday club teacher, or you're an assistant pastor, or whatever it is. No, we need someone to make the tea, so that somebody else can bring the tea to a third person who is welcoming the newcomer. We need somebody who can't actually get up and move around to sit there and pray for their neighbor who's had a tough time. We need people to put the chairs out when extra people turn up. We need techie people to make sure that we can all be heard from the front. We need people to do the washing up. We need welcomers on the door. We need musicians to play instruments. We need people to fold paper. We need extroverts to keep the conversations going, and we need introverts to notice the person who might need a little bit of help. And that's just thinking about Sundays. The church is a body, a family, that is not just limited to a meeting on a Sunday, but is part of God's plan for the whole of time and space. God's plans aren't limited just to a Sunday meeting. No, we are a body that serves just as much in the office, or on the ward, or at home, or at school, as we do here. And this starts to answer the why question from earlier. Why be united with God's people, the church? Why be united to all of these different people, not so that we can all be the same? Not to be tied down, but to be freed to serve together with all of our differences, to be part of the plan that God has for the whole of time, to bring all things under Jesus. God, this is what God is doing in the world, and he didn't have to include us. And yet he chose to. He chose to include us in what he is doing with the whole universe, his plans and purposes for the whole of time, to bring all things together under Jesus. And then he gave us the gifts that we need to be part of it. He didn't just leave us to get on with whatever it is we thought we wanted to be doing. No, he has included us in his plans. And you might say, well, to be honest, that just sounds exhausting. God's plans for the whole universe, and he wants me to work as part of it. It's hard enough getting out of bed on a Sunday morning, let alone to give my whole life to what God is doing in the world. I've got too many other responsibilities. Well, serving him is just going to get in the way. But if we're part of God's people, that's putting it backwards. Jesus has called us to be part of his plan for this world. And if we are Christians here this morning, that is our life's work. And that's good. But we do it in all sorts of different ways. We do it through our jobs, serving him faithfully. We do it as we bring up our kids, or we support our kids from afar, or we do our best to love our parents. The question is not adding an extra activity to an already overfull week. It's about what's at the heart of everything that we do. What's kind of the banner over all of it? What's helping us make the decisions about what we do? The question isn't, how do I fit it in? The question is, how can every part of my life best serve what God is doing in this world? Decisions about where to live, what job to do. It's not just a bunch of extra activities. It is whose plan are we part of, ours or God's? Verse 10, Jesus is filling the whole universe, bringing everything under his good rule as king. What he is doing, there is nothing more exciting. There is nothing more important, and ultimately there is nothing more rewarding to each of us. Grace has been given, that is undeserved kindness. This isn't God laying a burden on us, this is God giving a gift to us to be part of his plan. You may say, well, it still sounds exhausting. But part of the thing is that, yeah, it would be if it were down to me. But But that's why we need each other. That's why in joining a church and being united to God's people, it isn't adding, if you like, an extra list of responsibilities to an already full life. It is sharing our burdens with others that they might help carry them for us as we help them. The more that we serve each other, the more that we love each other, the more rewarding, the more fulfilling, the more in line with what God wants us to do, our lives will be. Now, I'm still relatively new to this church. We arrived over the summer, and so I don't know all of the things that each person here is involved with. I don't even know each of you yet, I don't think. But the more that I learn, the more that I am encouraged by what people are already doing, the folk giving up their weekday nights to serve with the young people who come here each week, all the different groups that are organised and run, the knitting group, the ladies' meeting, the 18 to 30s, all of them served faithfully by people. There's so many different little things that I keep discovering that are happening, the collating of prayer requests from local churches, which then get fed into a notice sheet that we then all get sent, and the people who will then fold the paper copies, the people who take copies of the sermon to those who are housebound, the people who prepare food for those who need it. This church is full of people who are using their gifts to serve each other. And so if you are already stuck in and involved, be encouraged. It is great what you are doing. And what you are doing is part of God's plan for all things. It is part of what it means to live a life worthy of your calling. It is part of how God builds the unity of his church. Be encouraged. But maybe you're still more on the fringe of life here, and for whatever reason you are afraid of getting more stuck in. Maybe it's some of the things I've already said, the fear of having to just be the same as everyone else. I hope you've seen that's not the case. Or maybe you're just already exhausted, and it just feels like yet another thing. Can I gently encourage you to join in? Jesus gives gifts to his people so that they can serve him and each other. And we are diminished if you're not with us. A number of years ago, I got a running injury. I got Achilles tendonitis quite badly. I had to go to the physio regularly over a number of months. And for most of that year, I was limping. I couldn't run. Even climbing up, quite gentle hills put me in a lot of pain. I was limping. It was just a small part of my body that was affected, you know, Achilles tendon, back of your heel. And yet the whole of me was affected. The whole of my body was limping as a result of just this one little bit that got injured. Maybe you are our Achilles tendon, if I can put it like that. And we are limping without you. Jesus doesn't make mistakes. He's put us in this body for a reason. And so we'd love you to come and help us to run. If you're here this morning and you don't trust the Lord Jesus, you're not a Christian believer, I hope what you've seen is that God's plan for the world is not just bringing everything and making everything exactly the same, a kind of cookie-cutter Christianity where everyone looks identical. No, no, no. God is a God, Father, Son, and Spirit, who is unity and diversity in his very being. He made a world to display that glory, the glory of unity and diversity. He could have just made one type of food. He didn't. He made many. He could have made all of us the same. He didn't. He made us different, and that is glorious. And in joining in with what God is doing in bringing all things under the Lordship of Christ, you are not losing your individuality. You are finding your place in the diverse people of God. You're finding the place where you can truly be who God has made you to be, truly be yourself as you come under the Lordship of Jesus. You can serve in the way that he has made you for and find the fulfillment that he promises. And for those of us who already trust in the Lord Jesus, each one of us, grace has been given as part of God's master plan. Let us get on and use it and find the great blessing that comes from being part of God's purposes.